Blog Talk Radio.
Well, first of all, you know, I was in Fort Worth, Texas for the last couple of weeks, and it's nice to be back home. It's always nice to come back home, and it's good to be here. And it was really odd because I had come down with a slight case of the flu. So, you know, I'm doing okay here tonight. I'm sitting here at my desk at my computer. That's what's nice about Blog Talk Radio. You don't have to go into a studio. You can just be, you know, right here in your home. And folks, hey, I'll even admit it. I've been in my pajamas all day today, just kind of recovering from this. And I'm sitting here in my pajamas talking to you on the radio all around the world. That's what technology does for us. And you know what? It's the wonder of that technology of what it's doing for us in this whole currency reset, dinar reevaluation issue. Because it's because of the technology, because of the internet, we have the ability to talk to each other, where we could never do that in the past. You had to have a lot of money. You had to be on a radio program. You had to be in a certain time slot, and you just didn't know what your listenership was going to be. You had to put up a ton of bucks in advance to promote yourself. Well, what's nice about internet radio, you can have a program whether you have 100,000 people or whether you have 10 people listening. It's up to you what you want to do and how you want to do that. And then it also gives us the availability for you to call in. But even better than that, folks, is it gives you the ability to listen to the program when you want to listen to the program. Because if you go to Blog Talk Radio, and then you type in the name, The Sedona Connection, my program, and you'll get, you know, the weekly programs that are there, you can download those programs about a half hour after the program is available. Like, you know, I'm in Mountain Time Zone, so right now it's, you know, 2 minutes after 7. But at about 9:30 my time, about a half hour after the program is over, the program is available to download in an MP3 format. So if you have an MP3 player, you can listen to this whenever you want, anytime you want, wherever you are, in any type of an MP3 player. Okay, now another thing. I sent out the email, the newsletter today, and please excuse the fact that I had one typo in there. But as you said, we have finalized the details, and I'm going to have a one-day workshop on March 23rd in Dallas-Fort Worth, and it will be at the Embassy Suites at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, okay? And I will have the details on that in a couple of days. Right now, I'm waiting for the graphics designer to come up, you know, with the brochures and flyers and et cetera and stuff like that, and how we can set it up so you can make reservations. I'll have those for you. And in that workshop, folks, I'm going to try to it's going to be set up into three segments. The first segment we'll talk about, again, is the history of all this, why it is happening, what is going on, how do we do this. Why is it taking place? The second segment, we'll talk about what do you do when you get your money? What about setting up bank accounts? Do you want to do trust? Do you want to do LLCs? Do you want to do subchapter S corporations? What are your relationships with the banks? What is it about how you would do that? Okay? And then what I am going to do, not only do I, you know, basically talk through that, but I will have lots of reference materials. Now, being in the internet age, instead of printing everything up and putting it into a binder format, I'm going to give you the connections with the websites and the links where you can go to those yourselves. I will put that into a couple-page format, and then I'll also make it available for you in electronic form. And then in the last segment, we'll transition into managing the millionaire within you. And that's what I call it. It's managing the millionaire within you. Because most of us have not been millionaires. And we don't really know. It's something that's new for us. How do we manage it? How do we be responsible with what we do with our money? It's going to be a one-day workshop. It's on March 23rd. Yes, it is a Sunday. I didn't have much choice because most of the places in that area, they were already booked up for us to be able to get the seating capacity that we needed. There is seating will be limited, so I would urge you to sign up fairly soon. You'll have about 4 weeks in advance. And what I've done, folks, I've set it up. So if you're coming from outside of the Dallas-Fort Worth area, you can fly in on Saturday, and you can catch the Embassy Suites shuttle over to the airport, spend one night there. They have an evening reception with the manager every night where they have basically free drinks. And then in the morning, they have a full, complete breakfast where, like, eggs and omelets are cooked to order. It's not just a little, continental breakfast. It is a full, complete breakfast. And then we'll give you time to get back to your room, and then we'll go through the seminar. We'll be done at 5 o'clock. And if you want to, you could even catch a flight back that night and be back home on Sunday night or stay over a little longer, however it fits you. But that's what I tried to do. I tried to set this up so that you could come from other parts of the country. You could fly in. It would be convenient for you. You wouldn't have to rent a car. And also, Embassy Suites is giving us about a 35% discount on the hotel rooms from what is their normal rate versus the rate that comes in because we're part of a group. I'll have all those details coming up for you probably about 3 or 4 days. Okay, so that's kind of the introduction stuff. Now, let me say one more thing. As I'm looking at what is called my studio page here in Blog Talk Radio, up at the top, it says this statement. I'm going to read this. We are currently under a DDoS attack. Now, I don't know a DDoS attack. I don't know what that means. It says this will mean intermittent issues with studios, playing files, and buttons on the studio. Thank you for your patience while we work this out. It was a notice that came to us from Blog Talk Radio, so we may run into a few problems here tonight. I'm just letting you know that in advance. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Tonight, I'm not going to be doing the talking. I'm going to be interviewing a wonderful guy that is known by the name of Jester. And Jester has, he's been at this for a little more than 3 years. I'm bringing him on the air right now. I says, Jester, why don't you go ahead and say hi to everybody? You there?
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, there you are, yeah. See, he's a guy from Tennessee. He's got that wonderful southern accent. You know, I try to do that. I'm not the best at it, but really love to have you. Glad that you're here. You know, I started this, actually not in the dinar issue, but I would call the bigger picture of what I knew was a banking collapse and the Nasara issue about 2.5 years ago is when I started looking into this stuff. And you've heard from me before is that 2 years ago, it was about 2 years ago, I sat down with a gentleman in a lobby in a bank in Vancouver, B.C., and he pulled out a $30 million Federal Reserve bond from the 1936 series, and I held that in my hand. And I realized, this is real. That's when I really realized something was really going on here. Now, I had other things going on in my life, so I didn't really get involved in all the dinar stuff, but it was back in May. Somebody introduced me to it, and I guess maybe it was just my time. But I had a lot of good understanding of the background on it, so I've been actively involved since May with what I call the global currency reset issue. And I've been reading a lot of different people. I probably scan a good 6 to 8 blog sites a day. I get a ton of stuff coming in through Facebook. And folks, you, the listeners and the readers, you either send me emails, you send me Facebook links, and I really appreciate that because that helps me get a very broad perspective on this. And while I'm on that subject, also, you may want to go and like my Facebook page, The Sedona Connection – Dave Schmidt, because what I'm going to do is, that see, we're in a slow season, so I'm only putting the newsletters out about once a week, but if something comes up intermittent, I'll go ahead and post it on that Facebook page. So you may want to do that. If you're into Facebook, go ahead and like me, The Sedona Connection, for what's there. I also have my own personal page, Dave Schmidt. If you just want to do that, you can do that there. I'll usually post them on both of them. You know, the one is the personal one. The other one deals pretty much just with what we're doing here on the Sedona Connection and the radio programs and the newsletters I put out. But I was learning from others, just as you, and all this stuff started falling into place. And then the next thing you know, in September of last year, I wrote this extensive article. It was called So Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? It was about 8 pages, and I've also referred to it as the Q&A. And I sent it out, and the next thing you know, it went viral, and it came viral to me. And within 10 days, I'd received over 1,500 emails coming in. And I'm enjoying this. This is what I do. I love to do this. I think for those of you that may be new to this radio program, I have a background in banking and finance. I have been a market trader, part-time market trader, for about 18 years now. I was a former state senator in Washington State, 12 years in the Washington State Legislature, along with 20 years in politics. And I also understand the military side because I had 25 years in the Army National Guard. I actually spent about 4 years in active duty through intermittent times. And so that's my background. That's where I come from. So not only do I have an understanding of the politics, I also can bring you an understanding of the financial side, and I can also bring an understanding of the spiritual side. And I think they're all interconnected. And so if you're not into the spiritual stuff, well, that's okay. If you want to listen, just tolerate us. But that's where the vast majority of the listeners here, that's where they are. Most of us, we come from that perspective, so that's where I come from. And folks, I also tell you, I let this spread by word of mouth. I'm not out here trying to make a name for myself. I just do what I love to do, and I figure if there's people who are supposed to hear this, it finds you. That's how I look at it. Well, tonight's guest, let me go back again to probably June and July of last year. When he was posting, he came up with some of the best stuff that I was following because I began to realize, this guy's making sense. It's not a bunch of hype. Not saying it's going to happen tonight or tomorrow. He's not talking about, you know, things that just aren't realistic. He backs up his statements when he can release the information. He gives some credibility that's there. And we all like to have that. At least I do. I like to be very practical. It says, I absolutely believe this is going to happen. And if you're like me, people think we're crazy. But I don't worry about that because then you can't let that stop you. But also there's a pragmatic side to how this is going to work. So because what that does, when you can bring in the pragmatic side, you're not putting yourself on this emotional drama roller coaster of tonight, 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 tonight. And personally, I don't think that's very healthy for you, but that's just my opinion on that. But Jester had always been one of the better ones. And then you have heard, probably about 3 weeks ago, I was talking about how he and a couple others that I thought were some of the best ones, it just kind of dropped out of sight. And you'll hear him talk about the reason he did that, because this was in the late summer. He was saying nothing was going to happen until December. He got attacked in the Dinarland community. He said, oh, no, no, you know, and people said, no, you know, some guys are saying it's happening tonight. And he says that every day. But he says, I don't need to put up with that. He just backed off. Well, he's kind of resurrected himself and brought him back on the scene because he has absolute excellent intel contacts. Now, I had some people ask me, if you're a former senator, why don't you have all that intel? Well, remember, folks, I was at the state level, not at the federal level. Now, let me tell you something in politics. Not everybody knows everything. You can be an elected U.S. senator, and you can be an elected member of Congress, but if you don't fit on the inside circle who they want to release this information to you, they're not going to let you have it. They're going to be very selective. It's going to take years for you to prove yourself and to gain your trust. The people in Congress who really knows what the stuff that's going on, those are the ones that have been there a long time, and they have proven themselves to be reliable. So they get the inside intel scoop, and they're also probably members of the intelligence committees, which means they are given intelligence information that they cannot release to the public. Now, that's a whole different scenario in a different world. And when I was in the legislature, I wasn't really into investigating NASARA and global currency reset and stuff like that. I had so many other things going on in my life that was taking up my time. But I still had that experience to come from, and I can understand how the system works and how the process works. I was asked many times to run for Congress. I just said, no, I don't want to be there. That's not the world that I want to be in, because when you're in that job, you're married to the job, and you don't have a life outside of that job. It consumes you 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year round. And I said, you know, I'm sorry, I don't want to, I want to have a life. So that's why I chose to not do that. I was thankful for my time at the state level. It was a great experience. So, all right, with that, folks, we're going to start now. I'm going to open it up, and we're going to start carrying on a conversation here with Jester. And if you have some questions or if you have some comments, this is the time to go ahead and dial in. And the number is 646-716-8069. Go ahead, dial in, and then you press the number 1, and that lets you know that you want to come on the air. So, Jester, welcome. Glad to have you here on the program tonight, buddy.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate this.
Well, let's start out. Go right ahead.
No, go ahead. That's fine.
Oh, well, let's start out. Why don't you give us some background of yourself, where you've come from, how you got involved in this, how long you've got involved in it, and kind of what's been your journey, what you learned along the way.
All right, very well. I thought it was interesting as you were explaining how you got involved in it from a Global Reset sort of a perspective, and then somebody told you about the dinar after the fact, because my journey was nearly exactly the opposite. I had a friend that I was doing some work with some time ago, and he tried to tell me about the dinar a couple of times, and finally I sat and listened to him a little bit, and then I did a little research on it myself and decided to come in on it a little bit. And then I found, that there was Dinar Recaps and the Guru and several other these sites that you can get on there to get information. And, boy, that really gets you excited when you read what they've got to say. Well,
yeah,
every day, right? I started thinking, man, I'm rich next week. You know, the more I got into, I guess I got sucked in kind of like everybody else did, watching different sites and waiting for the guru type people to come on. And I really hate that guru thing because I don't like that. I think it's more of an information type thing that I'm doing. I'm no guru. I'm just like anybody else. And I could tell you how I got started was just like a normal person. Every one of you guys out there that's listening and watching these blog sites, I was doing the same thing. I don't mind telling you that. But one thing that I learned pretty quick was that it was all the same stuff, but there was some people that knew some things. And when those people would come around, I tried to listen closely to what they were saying, and I realized there was probably a 10 or 15-minute window to get anything out of them. And the people would come, and if they didn't say the right thing, then these people that knew stuff, would sign off and be gone. And then you'd have to wait around forever for them to show up again. So if these guys started showing up, and after a 10, 15-minute period in any one given room, people start losing interest in talking about cupcakes and things like this. And I would start to, I would start to page them and talk to them in an instant message type time. You know what I mean? I could say, well, I was interested in what you were saying, but you didn't carry it much further. Could I try to understand a little bit more? And over a period of time, I got to know some of these guys a little bit. And after a little bit of time, they get tired of talking, and they say, hey, just call me on the phone. And that's kind of how it all started. I asked these guys questions. There's smart people in a lot of these rooms, people that have contacts. You don't know where their contacts are, and they might know something from the banking side. They might know something from the governmental side. They might know something from, whatever source they're getting it from. Each is a little different. But one of the things that I can tell you about Dinarland is they don't really talk to each other. It's kind of weird. Nobody has ever tried to get an information, collection of all the people that really know stuff in there. People talk to their little friends here or little friend over there or whatever, but it wasn't a very well put together information type venue. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so what I set out to do was try to meet these guys or talk to them on the phone and try to know what they knew. And, after a little while, they'd get to used to me and they'd say, well, I want to hook you up with this fellow. And I talked to that fellow some. And eventually what happened was I found some people that knew some stuff, okay? And at this early stage in the game, it was hard to understand where they were coming from to a certain extent because I hadn't got to the global reset part yet. So I assumed these people knew something from the sources they were getting, but what I started realizing was a lot of them were sharing a source. You know what I mean? So a lot of the information would be cross-connected, circular, however you want to define it. But I started meeting some people here and there, and I started liking this kind of like a spider web, all right? So I'm sitting in this web, and I got 4, 5, 6, 8, you know, major pieces of web going out to an anchor point, okay, and then all the other little webs in between, right?
Yeah.
And I started finding that there was probably about, really only about maybe 6 or 8 people that knew different stuff. And everybody else was playing off of them, all right? And so I quit playing in the room quite so much.
If I'm hearing you, there was about 6 or 8 people that kind of really seemed to be in the know, and then everybody else was playing off that. So what they thought was that they might be having an original source, but they're getting it secondary or third hand. Is that correct?
That's correct. And so it took a long time to figure this out. I mean, this is over a year period. You know, I'm drawing names on a paper with a little circle. This guy's talking to this guy, and that guy's talking to that guy, and then all of a sudden, the same information's coming down 2 lines. So there's something cross connected up here, and then I figured out what it was. Okay, this is really just one intel source, because even though it's coming from 2, 3 different people, it's all the same stuff, and so it's not really verifying anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't any kind of a supportive indication, because even though it was matching up and it was coming from 2, 3 different places, it was all originating at the same place somehow, or it was cross-connected higher than I was getting it, okay?
Yeah.
And so, you know, after a while, I was really only talking to maybe half dozen people, but I knew that they weren't talking to each other, all right? And so, even though there was probably, I don't know how many hundreds of people are involved in this little gathering net here. You know, this, I say each one of those guys has probably got their own little network of who knows how many. So there, at one point in time, I had, I don't know, 160 or 70 circles on this of people that I actually knew were doing something and who they were tied to. And I didn't talk to all of them. I didn't talk to all 100 and how many there were. I just talked to the guys that were getting the information funneled to them, all right?
Yeah.
And so I was sitting here in, kind of in the middle with these guys, and this person would hear this, and I'd take it over to this person and say, hey, what are you hearing about this? I wouldn't give them the information. I'd ask them what they were hearing about it. And so I started being able to see that to a certain extent, you know, the information would line up or not line up. And then what happened is I made some contacts where they came to me. They said, okay, we understand that you know some things or whatever, and I'd like to talk to you about this. And that was how I developed some really different contacts, some people that were maybe inside the system but had contacts that were really outside the system, because the information that was coming from them was totally different. I would get to the point of everybody saying it's tonight, 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 and I would make a couple of calls and say, hey, what are you guys hearing? And we're going like, well, you know what? That's not happening, because we know where those people are. And, you know, that happened the other night, actually night before last, where somebody said, well, so-and-so's in the bank. And I said, well, that's funny. I just had dinner with him. but,
yeah.
You know? And so it's kind of hard to explain how it all ties together in DNR land, but I think they're all hearing pretty much the same thing. And even though they might be hearing it from different places, I don't know if it's getting fed out there for any particular reason, if there's an ulterior motive for, you know, paying somebody to represent reserves or whatever, but the hype is really just a bunch of hype. And the reality is out there somewhere, and that was what I went around trying to find, okay? And so what really happened back in the summer was I started, you know, when I'd hear, hey, what's, you know, it's going to be tonight, and I would call my contacts, and he'd say, no, that's not happening. In fact, we're hearing it's going to be, you know, out a while. And the more those guys became right, I started realizing that those were the ones we really need to be listening to, because – at least they're giving us the reality, and they're right, because the guys that are calling it every night are not you know, doing anything but hyping the situation, in my opinion.
The guys that were doing that, you know, the guys that were kind of calling it almost every night, do you think they were being deceptively misled on purpose, or do you think it was partial truth and partial their own ego, or what? How do you interpret that?
Well, it's one of two things, Dave. You know, I think some of those guys, much as I hate to admit it, might be, you know, pumping the NAR sales, okay? It is what it is, okay? The reasoning behind that, obviously, is to put money in their pocket. The other thing would be, assuming that wasn't happening, then, and I think some of them definitely aren't doing that, just to be honest with you. Some of the guys are not doing that. I just, you know, I know them, some of them pretty well, and I just don't think they're doing that. But the information that they're getting fed is getting fed to them for a reason, okay?
Yeah.
You know,
what
we
do
had
you think
the conversation
that reason is?
Today.
What's your analysis on what you think that reason is?
Well, it opens up a whole other can of worms.
Yeah.
You know, that we had that discussion the other day about the history of what we think is really going down here. And we can get into that in a little bit of, if you like. I certainly don't.
No, I think that would be good. That would be good.
With that.
Yeah, we got lots of time tonight.
Oh, yeah. But getting back to the story of how I got started, if I just finish that up real quick. What I started realizing it wasn't about the dinar at all. You know, it's a global reset. You started from that end. I started from the other end. I had to learn that there was a big picture, and the more I put out that, the more people thought I was crazy, and I got some, you know, feedback of that nature, just like you do. And then when I came out last August and said, you know, I don't think this thing's going to happen a while, and I was pretty well crucified, and I didn't necessarily drop off the boards. They just pretty much dropped me off the boards. They quit putting us on recaps and things like that because nobody wanted to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, my theory was tell everyone the truth. Hey, don't quit your day job thinking this thing's around the corner because it might not get here quick enough for you not to lose your house or your car or whatever. And, you know, to do what you need to do to make it to the other side. I do believe, you know, in the reset and the dinar and the whole ball of wax. But what I found out, there was a lot of people that were just hanging out on the Internet waiting on the thing to RV next week because that's what everybody was telling them, and they believed it. And I know I had a conversation with a girl one night that said, you know, Oki caused me to lose my house. I said, well, wait a minute here. You know, you quit your job because Oki called it, but that's really not Oki's responsibility that you did that. I like Oki. I tell you something right now. He's a good man, and I've talked to him several times. And, you know, you're only as good as your information. And, you know, for whatever reason they're getting fed that, to mislead people or to, you know, for what other purpose the government is doing it, I think he's a victim more than anything, in my opinion, because he's a good man. He's a good guy.
I think one of the things that was helpful for me was because I was in politics for 20 years, I saw how the system works. And, you know, we have a tendency that we always want to take pot shots at our elected officials and think that they're to blame. But normally that comes from because down inside we want to blame somebody else for our problems, and they happen to be the scapegoats. And the majority of the people that are elected officials, the quiet ones, the ones that aren't rabble-rousers, they don't make the news, they're good people wanting to do the right thing, but they're stuck in a system they can't change. They're stuck in an institution they can't change. And then you always have a small percentage that are there for ego and power. And those that are there for power, you know, the powers that be, in this case on the federal level, you know, the powers that be would be the people that who are in the right leadership positions, the right committee chairs. They are the ones that really call the shots. Because, you know, it was interesting. You see, when I was in our state House of Representatives, there were 98 of us. we all had the equal weight because we all had the vote. And our vote, my vote, you know, was just as much as the vote of the Speaker of the House. But what it really came down to was there were 3 to 4 people that made the decisions. They were the Speaker, the Majority Leader, and the Chair of the Appropriations Committee and the Chair of the Taxing Finance Committee. Those people were the ones that really called the shots. And you had to go along with them, because if you broke off from them, then you become this total isolated person that you can't get anything done, because politics is such a team sport. It's like, you know, if you're the left guard on an offensive line and they call a sweep right, well, you better run a sweep right. It's only a couple times that you can do a sweep left against the rest of the team, and you become isolated and you become totally ineffective, and you're being there and you're just filling a seat, showing up with a vote, but you have no effectiveness and no power. So you have to play the team game. And what it really comes down to is at the very, very top, those are the ones that really call the shots, because they have the weight and the influence, and you're not wanting to go up and buck against them. If you're going to buck against them, you better be able to take on a pretty tough battle that they have a lot more power to squash you. And that's the way it is in politics. And so I learned that not only did I see that system in politics, I saw it in government agencies, and I thought, you know, that's pretty much the way the world works. And that's when I was able to step in and see that you got these people called the Federal Reserve, these 4 banking families that basically they're addicted to this power and control of running the world's money supply. And it is just that. It's an addiction. And it's never enough. They never have enough, because when you're addicted, you never have enough. And because power itself is an aphrodisiac, you can actually get an addictive high off of it. And that's what they do. And it's always been their goal to have a one-world government and to have, you know, one-world money supply, and they want to control it. And they're determined to do that. And they have so much money and so much power because they can squash people that they don't give up. You know, and over the decades now, and even a couple centuries, they've come to the point where they pretty much have direct and indirect influence on the whole world about what happens with people's money. And money affects every facet of our life. And so that's why it was easy to see for me that, yeah, there's a need of a global currency reset, because if we don't have a reset, we're going to have a collapse. Because I clearly saw fiat currencies always eventually collapse, and all the G8 countries are bankrupt with fiat currencies, and it's only a matter of time before they collapse. All they're doing is just kicking the can down the road, and what's happening is that the power elite, they keep kicking the can down the road, and I think where it is now, and I think, you know, Jester, one of the reasons why we haven't seen it happen yet, and help me out on this if you see this the same way, but what I see is they've been kicking the can down the road, create the collapse before the reset happens, because they're in such a desperate point that they're thinking if they create the collapse, they are then now in power to create the one world government, because it would be such a devastating thing to the whole world. And that's why they keep doing everything they can to delay this. Tell me your thoughts on that.
Well, I'd agree with that. I think that's probably the underlying reason why nothing has happened yet, is the fight against the reset. If they had been able to do the reset sooner, obviously everybody in Dinarland would be a lot happier. But I think that the cabal, if you like to call them that, is probably fighting that tooth and nail, because they realize it's really their very existence to a certain extent, or their way of life as they've known it up until this point. Their control of the central banks basically gives them control of the money supply. And if that, I mean, if, I'm oversimplifying it, of course, but if that, you know as well as I do, that if you control the money supply, you control the government, basically.
Well, that's the famous quote from Rothschild that he said in the mid-1860s. He said, give me the control of a country's currency and I'll control the country regardless of what laws they make.
That's correct. That is correct.
That's what he said, and, and he's been doing it ever since.
This is true.
Yeah.
And you know, you know that as well as I do, this most of the cabal is run on fiat currency. I mean, that's how they do their dirty work. And obviously if they can collapse the system, then that's just another tool for them to on everybody and put them back under their thumb and back into debt even further. Right. You know, I believe the 2008 crash was engineered, same as you.
Oh, I do too. I totally believe that. I mean, I suffered from that, and that's what woke me up. It had me so pissed off when I realized they engineered this thing. They purposely did it to create a crash, to make millions of people lose their homes, millions of people lose 30 to 50% of their retirement accounts, and then they became super wealthy out of it. It was another notch in their victory belt of, you know, debaseful of their ability to come back with any type of a power and make us become stronger. And that's exactly what they did, and it was purposely engineered for that. You know,
yeah.
I remembered it was one of the years I was campaigning, and at the state level, you go out with the most effective way to campaign at state level is you doorbell, you just knock on doors. And I was going through this housing development where the homes were only about 3 years old, and I hadn't been there for a while. And I'm knocking on these doors, and I'm realizing these are houses that are valued at $400,000. And as I was going down the street, I'm saying, how do these people afford these houses? I thought, you know, these were common, everyday, low-wage, blue-collar workers living in $400,000 homes, and they had bought these homes. Well, they got them through the subprime par interest rate loans, and the banks and everybody along the line that loaned them that money knew that in 3 years, when the rates were going to be reset, there was absolutely no way they were going to be able to afford those payments, and it was going to go belly up. Well, when you take that all the way up to the top at Wall Street, the best financial minds in the world, they knew it was a house of cards and it was a Ponzi scheme that was going to collapse. They just tried to position themselves to be in the good spot when it collapsed and then make money on the when it goes on its way down, because the pros know how to get rich in a falling market. They're very, very good at that. And it was the same thing that happened in the Great Depression. Millions of the masses become poor and a small percentage become extremely wealthy. In the 2008 collapse, millions upon millions lost their homes, or they're still underwater in their homes, paying, you know, high, you know, mortgage payments on an underwater house. So they're stuck. They're slaves in that situation. They can't afford to lose their job. They can't sell their house, so they're stuck there. And they engineered this, what I call a form of financial slavery, to keep them in that position. And there were billionaires that were made in that crash from the fall of 2008 to about a year and a half later. That's what woke me up. And I think what's going on here, why this is continuing to take time, and why it continues to drag out is because you have the powers that be, they just don't want to let go. And they're
agreed.
Pulling every string in the book that they know. And it is. It's what it is. It's greed, and it's an addiction. It's an addiction to greed. You know? How many billions do you need to live on? You know? Oh, I got one. Well, I got to have five. Got to have five because my neighbor has seven. You know, and then eventually I got to have eight so I can have more billions than him. You know, so comes an addictive greed, and it always sooner or later collapses. So. Well, okay. What else? The contacts that you have developed. I've been saying that a lot of the best ones are staying quiet. Tell me about what you see about that. How do you see that?
Well, I mean, I talk to my little circle of friends in my room about every night, and you know, we kick things down the road back and forth. We don't talk about the dinar too much because, you know, they understand and have accepted the fact that we're looking at a much larger picture. I think the part that I'm so actually proud of those people for is they're starting to think for themselves so much. I mean, it used to, back in the day, trying to get people to open their eyes, we always tried to find some real-world indicator of what we thought was happening. You know, we'd go out there, and I got a buddy that's really good at currencies, and he would say, man, these currencies are moving all over. And so we were tracking currencies and wondering why they were moving at such rates in directions we didn't think they should go in. And over a period of time, these were fairly large movements. And so we were thinking, well, they're doing some of this to get them positioned for the reset. And then we were looking at other things that we knew were happening. You know, why'd the thing with the Catholic Church and the Pope happen? I mean, does that seem highly unlikely that not only would they, you know, the Pope step down in the middle of his tenure, a guy from out of Argentina come up on the map and get, you know, elected just like that. And a lot of that, I think, was people getting the understanding that the Vatican was in a bad shape. And this guy came in, and I believe he's doing a lot of work towards cleaning that up. And so these kinds of indicators were what we would look for and bring to the different places that we were posting to kind of get people to open their eyes and see, hey, it's not just about the dinar. It's not about you. It's a big, huge picture that you got to see so that you're ready for it and you understand what you're really in. Your investment that you're in is not about the UST holding back your gravy here. It is all tied up in a world reset. And, you know, my people there are all seeing it now. They're bringing in great information and things that they see. You know, I don't have the time like I used to comb through the internet and try to, you know, find something of interest that I could bring to the room. And I don't have to anymore. They all bring good stuff. It's kind of a neat deal. And so even though I'm doing that in my room and recaps have started picking us up again, probably because they realized that, well, maybe the dang guy knew something when he said it wasn't going to happen. And so it's like a little bit of vindication, but to the same extent, you got to give them kind of a little bit of credit, too, for realizing that, well, you know, maybe there's another side to this story. So I think that was the best thing that happened to me in reality, because even though I got a smaller group that I'm talking to, it is being picked up on recaps again, but this is a really, really good group of folks in my room, and they are getting it. Their eyes are open,
go ahead
and
they're
trying to do something about it.
Yeah. Go ahead and tell the folks about what you have. You have a chat forum, and you're usually on there every night, and it's called Jester's Place. Now, do you allow anybody to come in and be a member and join this, or do you want to keep it to a certain size? Tell us about your chat forum that you have.
Oh, no. I mean, anybody's invited. I mean, it's open to everyone. Some people, you know, would rather have the tonight stuff. We don't have that there.
Right.
People will come in and say, hey, what are you seeing? And they bring articles in. Hey, I saw this today. And it's more of a forum of a group of people in, that has sort of come together of like mind. You know, they're interested in the Republic. They're interested in the world. And they're interested in the global reset, and it's not just a come on here and yeah, we're going to hype you up a little bit and make you feel good for a day. That's not what it's all about. And I think that's why, you know, our fall off happened back in August, because we just weren't putting what people wanted to hear out.
Well, it's back to even. We have a tendency to sometimes think it's cabal or the greedy ones. But we always have to take a look at ourselves and say, where's the greed in me? And we want our money and we want it now. Give it to me now. And then we get caught up into all the drama around that. And that in itself becomes just as much, it becomes a drama of addiction, an addiction of drama, I should say, where, the powers that be have an addiction of power through their money and their wealth. Well, we, the everyday folks, can end up being in the addiction of information. We want it, and we want it now. I have to have it now. I got to know what's going on now, because if it's not there, I'm not feeding my daily input of information. And if I don't have that, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. that in itself becomes just a form, just a greater form of an addiction, and it's a subset of our own greed, but just at a different level. You know, I mean, I was there. When I first started, you know, following Dinar recaps, I was on it every day, looking every day, and I thought, and I stopped after a couple of weeks. I thought, wait a minute, what's happening to me? Because I caught myself. I thought, I'm getting caught up into thinking this thing's going to happen any day. And I backed off, and I just got control of my own thoughts and emotions to make sure it wasn't controlling me. You know, it wasn't, because it was the very first thing I had to get up in the morning. I had to turn it on, had to read it, and I'd spend a half hour reading the whole thing before I even did anything else. It's so easy for us to get caught up in it. And I think what's healthy for us is to step back and keep ourselves in control so we don't allow ourselves to even fall into that trap. Because it's just another form of our own greed. I had to admit it. I was in that greedy state. And, so, yeah. In the last couple of weeks, you've been talking about different rates, different tiers of rates. Can you expound on that a little bit? Because that was kind of new to me. I know you said there are different rates out there, and I understood there was going to be stuff for the governments and stuff for humanitarian aid projects and stuff for individuals. Expound on that a little bit to help us understand what those different rates mean.
Well, you know, one of the things that if you ask anybody that really knows me will say is that I don't do rate or date. I mean, it used to be a big joke for a while, but because, quite frankly, I don't know 100%. You know, exactly what's going on any more than anybody else, just to tell you the truth. I can tell you when people say, this is looking good, or we're trying to do this, but nobody's calling me and saying, hey, by the way, the refit's going to be on Sunday at 4. It's just not like that. Rates is kind of the same thing. We can tell you what we see on the screens. I got a really good contact that follows that on the banks and the Forex, and, you know, he just get to the point where, you know, he just called me and say nothing's changed. But we're looking at rates in the normal, what everybody would think, you know, Kuwait, you know, in the same area as Kuwait and that sort of thing on screens.
Yeah.
Some of this other stuff that you hear out here, and I kind of got irritated the other night, and that was, I guess I put out some stuff I wouldn't normally say anything about, but, you know, we were talking about country rates, and when those guys hear rates, the problem is they don't understand what it means, because there's different rates for different things, and, you know, there's tiers in this thing, for lack of a better word. There's sovereign tiers. There's private placement tiers, there's, you know, group tiers, and then the street rate, I guess. So you can kind of break it down like that. And we were aware that there was probably really only about three rates, okay? And so when people would be hearing these rates out in the wild, hey, I heard it was going to be, you know, $32 or whatever, I knew what it meant, but they didn't. Because they didn't understand It was a country rate. They didn't understand that this was made up for the oil credit rates, okay, for instance. And they didn't realize that, quite frankly, it's split three ways. And the recipient part, the only part you can spend freely is up to the street rate. Anything between that and what you got as your third was to be used for humanitarian projects that had to be approved by the authorities. So, and this is part of the humanitarian effort that the countries, you know, had that rate. So if you were fortunate enough to get in on the country rate, then you got to participate at the high level and split a third of it with China and a third of it with the USD. And out of your third, you got to spend up to the street rate, but the rest of it had to be projects. It's as simple as that. But when people would hear these high rates, they wouldn't put that information out with it. Hey, we're going to get $32, which it ain't happening. I'm sorry, but you're not going to get $32. It is not happening. So you can say what you want about group rates. You know, there's a platform rate. You know, the private placement groups have a rate. These are probably whales and special people. And then, you know, and then there's the normal rate. And that can be, you know, anywhere a little bit above the street rate.
When those that there are some that are being cashed out, and that their money is really monitored, if I understood you correctly. So if somebody got, let's say, $20 for a humanitarian aid project, but they only get to have 3 of it for themselves and the rest has to go to the project, is that money is monitored to make sure that they're spending it in an appropriate manner. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, so you can't get by with it. You can't steal from this stuff. You can't cheat the system in this. That's my understanding.
Well, you know, I've known for a long time, you know, some of the system type things that they can do out there. You know, a lot of people think, well, I'm going to cash out a 25K note and go get my reserves. If you do that, you're probably going to be in trouble. That's my opinion. Based on what people have told me, so it's not just something I made up as a complete opinion, but it's, you know, I don't like to put out a for sure because anything can get changed at any time, but they're not going to let you double dip, and that's considered double dip. If you use money you got, no matter on a reval, and you cashed out, and you use that money to buy more dinar, you're double dipping. I don't care if it's 125K note or whatever. I don't care. If you use money that you got on the RV, they're going to know it. They're going to track this money. This money is trackable. You know, you're going to get paid in the UST, and the computer's going to follow that ever how far it needs to follow it. I mean, it's just a set of numbers, and if that anomaly is flagged, you're probably going to get a, you know, I mean, I don't know. You might get a knock on the door. You might get your funds frozen. You might get what? The ramifications are, you know, unknowable, but we know that that they have a system in place to keep it from happening. Okay.
Yeah, and that's good to know, and it really is good to know. Hey, let's do this. Let's do a little shift here, and let's just go into a couple callers because they've been holding on the phone here for a little bit. So let's take a couple callers' questions, and is that good for you, Jester? Are you ready for that?
Absolutely, no problem.
Okay, all right. So the first caller we're going to go to, his name is Paul, and he's from Minneapolis. Paul, welcome. You're on the air here tonight with Dave and Jester. What can we help you with?
Hi, good evening. First question for Jester is regarding the various currencies. We've been hearing a lot about the dinar. What's your take on the Vietnamese currency, the Indonesian currency? Are there any other currencies that may revalue above the dollar at the global currency, on the onset of the global currency reset?
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure that the dong is going to have a movement. These other currencies that people talk about, the rupee and the Zimbabwe and all that stuff, I think the problem is you don't know where they're going to end up in the reval, okay? So let me expand on that a little bit. If you look at what's going to happen in the reval, 192 countries are going to reset at one time, in my opinion. And their relationships to each other are all going to change. You know, the dollar may go down a little bit or maybe even significantly. Any other country, you just don't know exactly where they're going to end up because it's all going to be based on resources, gold, and asset backed, okay? And you can try to project what some of those countries are going to be worth after the fact and whether their currency is going to be higher than what it is right now with respect to the dollar, but you don't know exactly where they're going to end up because you just don't know what they got. You know, and I can tell you my opinion on – my real opinion on that is, haven't you got enough problems? But with the dinar, you know, go ahead and buy some dong if you like. But I don't think anybody can safely say this other currency is going to do this, that, or the other thing. It would hugely surprise me if the Zimbabwe dollar even revalued. Because I think, you know, due to the fact that basically they replaced their currency over a period of basically 5 years, three times, you know, and they haven't used anything but the dollar and the pound and a couple of other things since 2009, that they wouldn't just print new currency. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
I mean, right. I didn't mention the Zimbabwe dollar for that reason. Yeah, and I guess where I was coming from was that in some ways the dinar has been a sort of a circus, and so I've been veering more towards the Vietnamese currency. And then in the last week or two, you know, the gentleman J.C. Collins has been running the column, the blog, Philosophy of Metrics, about the new Bretton Woods articles and the article about the Vietnamese dong revaluing. That got me thinking that perhaps you know, the attention's been too much on the dinar and maybe not on some other things. So that's where I was coming from.
Well, that's possible. I'm familiar with the article you're talking about, and it was a good one.
I read it too. I thought it was a very good article.
Yeah. So the bottom line here is, nobody knows what the intrinsic value of each currency is going to be when the reset happens. It's all going to be based on assets. And so you certainly don't know at this time what the relationship between currencies that are obviously all going to change is going to be.
Right.
That's the hard part.
Okay.
I mean, you're looking at speculation at its best.
Right. On to the next question, and again, it's a speculative question, but nevertheless, the Treasury notes versus the Federal Reserve notes, I mean, there's all sorts of tales out there, including Republic and Nassara, which I'm not going to go into right now, but more specifically about the Treasury notes, I mean, I heard stories, well, maybe about 2-3 weeks ago that the U.S. Treasury was on lockdown and they were printing out the Treasury notes and so on and so forth, but it's stepping out of the realm of the ridiculous and into practicality. If we're going into an asset-backed and value-backed currency scheme, which is hopefully what this is going to be instead of a collapse, then where does that play out? Do you see the Treasury notes coming out right at the beginning, you know, the onset of the reset?
I think they're already out to a certain extent. You look at your dollar there, and on one side's one thing with a bunch of normal old green ink and the U.S., the Federal Reserve on that side, and then on the other side, the nice gold numbers and the inkwell and all that business. I think that was designed to be a kind of a convertible bill, okay? Now, we only have hundreds, so... hopefully, that's not going to be our smallest denomination. However, they will have to do something at some point in time to get some smaller denominations. But, you know, look at the date on that thing. You know what I'm saying? 2009.
Right.
They've been doing this thing. I think they've been doing this that long. I think that it has been held up for that long by the cabal, as Dave likes to call them. And... otherwise, why would it come out like that? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Why would they put 2009 on it? And why would they hold on to them for that long?
Right.
And so I think this struggle has been going on for a lot longer than anybody has any idea. I don't think that anybody would have ever guessed that this thing would run out 10, 11 years. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
If you... go ahead.
Which brings me to my last question, which is about There are so many facets to this event. I mean, there's the I'm in touch with the, some of the historical bonds people. There's people that are waiting on the prosperity packages. There's the global currency reset people. There's the Wanta Mitterrand, whatever protocol. You know, those funds. I hear something about a Saint Germain. And I guess where it all translates into is a flush of liquidity, enough liquidity to go into the system so that there is a new global liquidity and prosperity. And at what point, what are the kinds of events that you see? I'm not talking about dates or rates, but what are the kinds of things that you're looking for that you could tell everybody, well, if you start seeing this, that, and the other thing, then you could be pretty well, thinking it's on the way.
Well, we've been watching it for some months now. I mean, like I was saying, the guys in my room were getting really good about digging these articles out and bringing in, hey, look at this, and people talking about the reset, even, out loud over the past weeks. I don't know that I have any one specific act that I think is going to trigger anything. All those things that you mentioned, I believe, are part of it. And I believe they're all tied together in this. When the timing is right, then somebody will pull the string and things will start to move along in their respective directions with their, the Wanta Mitterrand and all the prosperity packages and CMKX and all that stuff. So, it's all out there, but I think it's all tied to the same thing. It's all tied to the money being able to move in the direction that it needs to go so that everybody gets paid back what they're owed. And that goes to the bonds too. I mean, I do believe, I get some close contacts with some people with some bond information, and we know that at one point the intake was there. The thought was that the reset was going to be back in the summer. And they actually started intake on some of the bonds. If I had to say, that they were going to be, liquidated along with all the other debt, then obviously the reset's got to happen so the money can flow. And all those funds have to come together. They tie together, one funds another, and this is how that happens. And I had a lot more understanding that everything was tied together to everything else than ever before when I started seeing, some of the bonds were actually, being taken in. So,
Okay. Well, I'm going to, let the next person go, and thank you very much.
Well, I hope
that
helped.
Thanks,
you.
Paul. Okay. Appreciate you calling. Okay. Yeah. Just let me ask you this. I know the listeners on my program and also in my newsletters, I've always said when you look at this thing from the bigger picture, you always have to ask the bottom line question. That's who's footing the bill? Because the reports are coming out, there's 35 to 40 trillion dinar out there. Well, who's paying the hundreds of trillions of dollars to cash that out? And if you see a limited amount of money, that there isn't that much money that's out there, then obviously you would say that, well, this is not even possible. What the most it could come out is 10 cents, 20 cents, or whatever it would be. And so it all comes back to how much you believe there's this money that is out there. And I've always stated, and I don't apologize for this, is that it's the existence of the Dragon family. And the reports are that they have literally thousands of trillions of dollars of gold that they've been collecting for millenniums. Can you expound on that? What is it that you know about that?
I'd agree with that to a certain extent, but then on the other hand, I think that it's several different avenues, okay? You're right, there's not enough money to do it all in the world right now as we know it, okay? There's just not. If you consider the gold and you consider, you know, what they might put up for doing what they need to do, then you got to look at the funds Wanamaker, all these are all huge numbers in a lot of these funds associated with that gold and this that. I think it's more complicated than just one thing. Complicated further by trying to follow the money and find out who's going to be benefited by what's going on here. You know, one simple thing to talk about is oil credits. You pay whatever you pay for a dinar to get it converted to an oil credit at a certain rate, okay? The dinar is never repatriated. It never goes back to the Iraq. It's destroyed, and it's converted into an oil credit, okay? Now, you got to imagine that if you have a dinar worth however many dollars, let's just call it street rate, $3.44, you convert that to the oil credits. And for Iraq to produce that $3.44 of oil costs a penny.
Yeah.
Or whatever. You know it's cheap.
Right.
So they didn't have to give you any money for that. They gave somebody else some oil because they gave you the money for it. You see what I'm saying? And
right.
It was cheap for them to do it rather than, because if everybody took the dinar to Iraq, Iraq could go, okay, we're bankrupt.
Yep.
So there has to be a venue for them to get that back, and that's one of them. I mean, we know about oil credit contracts. You know, the UST and China have them. I think China has them because the UST, you know, contracted with them to get them. And, you know, if you think about it for a second, it's a good deal for the U.S. and it's a good deal for the Chinese. China doesn't have any oil. You know, UST gets a benefit from it, you know, by selling them to them, the rights. You know, this is such a complicated picture, it's not even funny. That's just one little piece of it. Your gold is another little piece of it. The Wanamaker funds are another little piece of it. The prosperity, I mean, it's all tied together. It's all a huge picture. I would love to see the architecture of the whole dang thing at some point in time. You know, some people that I've talked to about that say, you know, it'd take you 6 months to figure it out. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Hey, tell me what you do is with some, you don't need, of course, you don't name your contacts, and we all totally respect that. But you've had conversations with people that actually are in touch with the Dragon family. So what can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, these are tenuous contacts to a certain extent because you're not going to get direct information. You know, nobody sit me down and explain the whole story. You have to kind of piece it together by things they say and things they don't say. And, you know, when you're talking to somebody about, well, we understand you're running, you know, a country deal or whatever, we talk to these people and she'll say, well, you know, I can't tell you that. Or, you know, we understand, you know, these things to be the way it is. And it's hard to explain some examples because I wouldn't want to let people think that I would share information that I wasn't supposed to, for one thing. And I value the contact to the point to where I don't want them to think that I'm just spraying their information all over everywhere. So I kind of had to be careful what I say if I want to know more. And it takes so long to develop any kind of a trust, it's just difficult to, you know, say detailed information that probably everybody would like to hear, but it's part of the puzzle that they don't understand anyway. You know, does that make sense? Because one of the things that used to happen to me in the room is I'd spill a little tiny bit of information because everybody was like, well, you know, well, tell us something. And then, of course, it always led to 4,000 questions about how could that be true and what's it tied to and this, that, and the other thing. So I kind of quit doing it.
Yeah, I can understand that. So, yeah. Well, I think for me, the one that I've enjoyed the most, and I've talked about him on my newsletters and radio programs, it's the research. It's a PDF book that a guy by the name of David Wilcock has done. It's called Financial Tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yep.
I mean, he takes you all the way back to the – have you read that?
I have not, but I've heard about it.
It's quite long. Well, he when I say it's in PDF format, he actually – you can download it and it comes out in, you know, in a Microsoft Word pages, and there's a lot of white space. So, but it's the equivalent of about a 200 to 250-page book. But he goes all the way back to the mid-early 1700s and talks about, you know, the rise of the Knights Templar, who became the Freemasons, out of whom came the Rothschilds, and how do they, their desire for rule, control of the money, and how that developed and grew through Europe, and coming to the point where they were the instrumental behind, you know, forming the Federal Reserve, you know, at the, you know, a little about 100 years ago. And he documents and footnotes everything to the hilt. And then, and the book is in three parts. And when you get into the second part is where he talks about all the gold in Asia. And
mm-hmm.
it's just,
it's terrible.
We have a tendency to think that it's deep in central China with the Dragon family, but that's just part of it. And he documents and footnotes and gives articles. So he doesn't say stuff unless he can back it up. But he said, have you ever stopped to think about why China never wants to let go of Taiwan? Well, because when Chiang Kai-shek left, he took trillions of dollars of gold with him, and it's buried under the hills of Taipei. And have you ever thought about why the United States was so strong in defending the Philippines? Because there's trillions of dollars of gold in the Philippines. And have you ever thought to stop at why we really, really went to war in Vietnam? It wasn't about the spread of communism. It's because there's trillions of dollars of gold buried in the underground tunnels in Vietnam. That's the reason why. And most of our wars are all based around that. It's based around power and control to create fear within the people. You keep them enslaved in their minds and their thoughts. You keep them enslaved to debt. And then you can control them, and you control the world's money supply. And then war becomes a way of making money as well. And it's just, again, it's just back to the greed of power and control and the addiction that they have. And but that there's gold in Thailand. There's gold that sunk in some of the ships over in the Pacific Ocean there around in central, you know, in that, I mean that Southeast Asia area. It's all over there. So and
agreed.
That's, see, and to me, and this is just my own personal opinion. See, and the Dragon family have always been the controllers of that, and they are apolitical. They don't care about Republican versus Democrat, liberal versus conservative, and they don't care about communism versus democracy, because they see that it's something that's rising above all of that, and it's the rising of our human consciousness, where we, as a human race, that we move from financial slavery and fear of being controlled by a few to where we become set free as a people to be able to have the resources to do what we want, when we want. And then what I've been doing in the last month has been using, you know, the analogy and the metaphors of when Moses freed the Egyptians, you know, from Egypt. It's a great metaphor, because, you know, for years and years and years they had been in slavery. They were slaves and they were in poverty. And within a week they were on the other side of the Red Sea and they were in wealth and they were free. But that was just the start of the story, because the real goal was the Promised Land. And it took them 40 years to make a two-week journey because they didn't have the right mental mindset to make that two-week journey in 2 weeks. Because I remember seeing this from a guy, you know, when he, and I quoted him, and he said, you can't take a slavery mentality into a promised land. It won't work. When you move into a promised land, to truly be in the promised land within yourself personally, you have to also have a promised land mentality. You have to know how to think right about money, about giving, about caring for others, not being tied to your wealth, letting go of the old drama of the greed, even with that we all have within ourselves to some degree, and you have to let that go. You have to be able to undo all of that within yourself. And I think, see, the Dragon family has been waiting for centuries, if not millenniums, for this time, and we're there now. But they're very patient. Very, very patient. They'll wait another 2 months and 2 years or 10 years if necessary, because they're not going to release that money and let the cabal get control of it and keep the control for another 100 years. They just won't do that. And I think that's underneath it all, that's one of the main reasons why it's taking so long, because they're having to unravel all that stuff. So your thoughts on that? Oh, hey, well, folks, I don't know what happened here, but we lost Jester. We just lost him. So would you just be patient with me for here just a minute? He just dropped off there while I was talking. Who knows? Sometimes we have some issues, because I did have some other people that were lined up to call, and I'm able to have Kenny, who the ones running the switchboard to screen them, and they wouldn't even tell who they were. They wouldn't answer. If you remember, 3 weeks ago, we had basically some organized attacks on us. So I don't know. Here's what I'm going to do, folks. I'm going to try to do two things at once. I'm going to try to be able to text Jester, and at the same time that I'm still talking to you, so that I don't have any dead space here. So let's see. Hold on. I'm having to, and I can't, and on my text message. Just hang here with me, folks. Thank you. Let's see. Thank you for being patient. I'm going to text him to call back and see if we can get him to come back in, because I don't know why he dropped off. Let me scroll down and see if he made the bottom of the list. That's weird. So I send him a text message to call back, and we'll see if he's going to come back in. But he had just dropped off with no indication whatsoever what was going on and what was happening. We had a great conversation going. I really enjoyed having him on the air with us tonight, and we'll see if we can get him to come back in here and see what we can take place here. But also, folks, if any of the others, if you would like to call in, if you would like to have some questions, go ahead and then give us a call here at 646-716-8069. That's 646-716-8069. Okay. He's calling in and saying that it's full. Oh, shoot, it is. You see, I can only take 50 callers at a time. Folks, may I ask some of you to do this? If you've called in on the phone, would you go over to your computer and listen there? Because, see, I can only take 50 callers at a time. It's all that I can have as are calling in live. And I would like to get about 10 people to drop off, and then that way I can bring him back on and he can call back, okay? So, and if, Jester, if you're listening to me, you can do that as well. You can go ahead and call back again. So we'll bring you back on here, because, hey, we still got 40 minutes left tonight. You know, folks, we always have, 2 hours every night here on the program. So let's see there. And, Penny, we do have a couple people that have called in that want to talk, so maybe we can also bring them on as well. We're waiting for Jester to come back as well. So, yeah. But I have no idea. I have no idea. So, okay, you said that you're here. Oh, there you are. All right. Okay, you're back on.
I am.
Yeah,
yes,
I
am.
Have no idea what happened. You just fell off.
Yeah, the phone was just sitting here on the desk. I don't know what happened either. I don't know
where
I was.
Some people think that we're in a flat world, so you didn't fall off the edge of the world, but you know.
Absolutely.
And when you tried to call back in, see, I can only take 50 live callers at a time, and when it hits that mark, it's going to say that you're full. So I asked a couple of folks and said, hey, if you don't want to talk, would you just, drop off so you could come in, and then you were able to get back in. So, yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Well,
I hope somebody can they still be able to listen, I hope.
Yeah. Well, you heard what I was saying about the Dragon family and the source of gold and all that's there, and this has been a history that goes back almost 250 years of what has grown there. See, and I think, to me, it's a common sense issue. That's the only place that there is that much money on this planet to back up a dinar reset, let alone a dong revalue on top of that, because that money's got to come from somewhere. You know, they can't just print it up, because then we're just back to fiat currency again that they're printing up and giving to us in the currency exchanges. So, yeah. Well, what else? Anything else that you wanted to add on to that? I've gone through the things I had on my list. What are some of the things that you would want to talk, or any questions you would have of me?
No, I'm pretty good. The only thing that I'd add to your dragon family thing, and I don't know how much you heard about, I mean, I was talking along when I realized you guys were gone. But, you know, this is a 3 or 4 player game, in my opinion, the dragon family being one of them. I think you got the good guys on the U.S. side too. Call them white knights, white hats, whatever you want. And then you got the cabal, and I think you got the BRICS. Okay, you can call them the Chinese if you like, but this is a struggle for very simply control of the money supply. So, you know, the cabal's fighting the BRICS. The BRICS fighting the cabal, and they're all fighting the knights and the dragons for control of the system.
Right.
You know, if the cabal lets the system crash here, then BRICS is going to win, and they're going to control the money system with a new reserve currency. And there's all kinds of things out there already about Australia established some direct trade agreements with them. Russia's done the same thing. The BRICS being, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and I think they added an I at some point in time, but I don't know if it was official, but I think Indonesia was in there too. You know, that set of BRICS nations is basic direct contradiction to the G8 countries that are controlling the central banks on the other side with their reserve currency.
And I've always talked about that, is that, you know, the G8 countries so screwed up the global financial system that the BRIC countries are stepping in to say check in this global financial chess game, because that's pretty much where they've got them, but they're not at checkmate yet. But they've got them in a check situation, and, you know, I think the cabal is still playing out their moves to see if they can find a way to get out of it. And it just doesn't look good for them.
That's what I think they're doing. I think they're doing that with the Canadian dollar and the Australian dollar. I think that's their backup plan in case the U.S. dollar gets screwed up.
Yeah. So let's talk about,
you know, it's all
briefly,
a big game.
Let's talk about briefly if the U.S. dollar collapses or falls. Now, because a lot of people don't understand how currency devaluation works. You know, because people will write to me and say, well, if the dollar falls, am I going to lose everything? Is this all going to fall apart? Is my money going to be worthless? And I say no, because a dollar is still a dollar inside the United States. It still purchases a dollar inside the United States. What it means is it's fallen in contrast to other international currencies, and so those things that we import cost more money. So anything that you buy as imported will cost more. Other than that, a dollar is still a dollar. There's positive sides to it collapsing. I don't want to say maybe not collapsing, but falling, because it would bring tons of manufacturing jobs back into our country. Because now all of a sudden our dollar isn't so much higher than the other countries, and it is better to manufacture the stuff inside country versus outside country. And that's been a big part of, you know, what's been the unwinding of our economy over the last 3 decades. Is that, you know, we lost the manufacturing edge and our manufacturing jobs went overseas, and we were left with either high-level service jobs or low-level service jobs, and that was pretty much running our economy.
So I agree with that 100%.
That?
I do.
Yeah.
If you look at the reset, I just don't think with the amount of USD out there and converting it, if the Fed makes it, that it's going to be near, you know, what it is now with relationship to the other countries. Now, you know, like you say, that's not going to affect anybody here. I mean, a dollar is still going to be a dollar inside the country. And, you know, the only thing that's going to be affected is the things you buy from outside. So a Volvo is going to cost more, and a Mercedes, well, whatever's not made here. A lot of them are, you know, partially made here, I guess. But, you know, the effect is going to be growth in the economy from a couple of places. You know, it's going to create jobs. And I think that it will, I think it, I mean, I hope it would instill some pride, okay?
Yes, yeah. No, and I agree.
You know?
I agree. So, you know, because, see, and a lot of people think that China is out to take control of the world. And I say, no, they're not. China wants a successful United States. China needs a successful United States because we are the ones that buy the things that they make and manufacture. They need us to have a good economy to provide jobs for their people because they've got these 1.4 billion people in their country, and they got this massive burgeoning senior population that is becoming extremely expensive for them. So China's economy isn't as good as what people think it is and what it's made out to be. It's because they went on that one-child policy for a long time, and they've now got where these 1.4 billion people, a very high percentage of them, are moving into senior ages where they need to be taken care of by those that are younger, and the balance has become so imbalanced, it's just eating up their money. And so they need the United States to have a strong economy, a consumer economy, so we can buy the goods that they manufacture and make for us. So, you know, I don't think China wants to see us go down the tubes. It doesn't benefit.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But I think they want to be like us. You know, they got an emerging,
they do. They want to be like
middle class. I think they want to be another United States to a certain extent, and they've got to do some things to be able to do that.
Right. Yeah. So I don't. Yeah. Now it could be a different story 100 years down the road, but at least for the next 10 to 20 years, that's what I see. So, well, let's do this. Let's go to another caller. We've got a gentleman in Texas. He goes by Tex-Mex, area code 972. You're on the air here with Jester and Dave. What can we do for you?
Well, hello. I'm glad to be able to get in and talk to you. I've been involved in the historical bonds for a couple of years, and nothing ever happened. We kept feeling that it would happen any moment. And then we were waiting on the prosperity funds to be released to be able to fund these historical bonds. And so I guess as a part of that, we got involved with the Benar and the revaluation, and you know, I kind of every week I read everything, listen to everything, and I know Tony is a four-letter word with a lot of people, but I've been listening to him, and he's saying that it could happen any time. And Jester, I know you don't do rate and date, nor does anyone. I'm just trying to figure out where we are currently.
Well, you know, there's a couple of different things that I'm hearing lately, okay? There for up until a week or two ago, I would have told you it was going to be at the end of the first quarter or maybe out in June. We've had some slight, I don't know what to call them other than blips on the radar to a certain extent, from some of our best contacts saying, well, you know, we're hearing some things like this, you know, might be closer than that. You know, nobody's going to be able to tie down an exact moment on this or anything, but I think that, you know, when I listen to these guys, they're just as confused to a certain extent by what they're hearing, because they're saying, well, you know, we don't really see a reason for it because we were pretty firmly on the end of first quarter. And you know, back when I was hearing it in the summer last year, they were saying, you know, November time frame, but they've moved out a little bit as we went along, and you know, I've informed, you know, my people of that. But you know, here recently there has been some indications that things may be a little closer than they thought. So that's really all I can tell you, because there's nobody that knows the rate and the date. I'll tell you something right now. Nobody's calling anybody, I don't care who they are, and telling them when this is going to happen, because they don't know. The information that they're getting is the same information that I was getting last year that was ticking me off because it was never right. Now, they haven't got any different contacts. It's the same contacts telling them the same thing. Now, there's two things you can look at in this. either that contact that's telling them doesn't know what they're talking about, or they're lying to them, one. There's probably a third option, and that is they think they can do it, think they're going to try to do it, so the contact says, hey, we're getting ready to try this, but the people that are really in control aren't letting it happen, which is what I
think. Well, Jester, who do you really think is in control? I'm in with a group that has got a straight pipeline into the Elder family in China, and we get good information there. Then I hear these other things, but in this last year, nothing has come true. I would dislike, I don't know, one of the governmental agencies, UST, the IMF, the banks, or somebody to come out with something that you can read. I don't think it's a scam, because I've gone through the scam thing, and if it's a scam, who's making money? I mean, the only person that can make money is currency dealers, and they'd be paying all the gurus and whatever to put this stuff out there, and I'm just trying to figure out who is really going to make the call.
Well, I could give you a history lesson on why this happened and how you got involved in it, but that might be a subject for another call, because it's pretty long. I don't mind doing that, but, you know, this is all about why you go to war and who pays for it. And basically, instead of the countries paying for the reconstruction effort and the money to go back to Iraq, you paid for it because it went back to the CBI through your buying dinar. Okay? So instead of the sovereigns funding this through the platforms like it's always been done in other wars, basically, you know, we help finance it. So, you know, that's a 10-second history lesson, but it's way more complicated than that. But, you know, who's in charge is the hard part, okay? If you realize that the Dragon family, and keep in mind that's different from the Elders, okay? It's not necessarily the same people, okay? Because there's Chinese Elders, and there's the Dragon family, which is a different deal. Same thing with that's like calling the White Knights the U.S. Army, okay? It's not the same thing. They're apart. So if you want to realize that these people that are in control of the system to a certain extent that aren't letting these things happen until they're ready, that's as good a way to look at it as any. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Do you feel like they're going to do a region-to-region rollout, or do you think that whole 198 countries are going to do the GCR in one night?
I think they'll all go at once, and I'll tell you why. I don't think that they're going to give you an opportunity to double-dip on something else. That's my opinion, okay?
Yeah.
We've heard that. You know, of course, there's two sides to that story, just like everything else. But, you know, one of the things that we hear from our better guys is that it's all going to go at once for that reason. Because they're not doing this for you, guys. I mean, as much as you'd like to think that they sold some dinar to you so that you could become a bazillionaire, that wasn't their primary importance. I do believe that, going back to the history lesson, people invest in this because, A, they didn't want to pay for it, and it didn't cost them anything to sell it to us and have that money funneled back to the CBI into the reconstruction efforts. Okay, you do understand that's how they fund this stuff.
Sure.
The reconstruction's normally paid for by investors in countries, and they print up a bunch of the dinar, they put it in the vault. When it revalues, they get paid back. Simple. I mean, that's way oversimplified from what really happens. But if you look at it from that standpoint, they also have a secondary, you know, purpose, I guess you could say, to feed some of the money back into the people. You know, hopefully the people do good things with it, humanitarian efforts and that sort of thing. Some people go blow up on houses and cars and be right back looking for the next thing on the internet, you know, 5-10 years from now because they bought a house that they couldn't pay the taxes on. But, you know, that's another story. It all goes to bolstering the economy. You know, because you're going to go buy stuff. I mean, that goes without saying. So
yeah.
But that, there again, you know, getting back to what Dave and I were talking about a little while ago, you know, the gold and the, all the other various and sundry funds, this is all tied up into a huger picture than you might imagine, and that's what I've been trying to explain for some time, you know?
Well, I've heard, when I really thought that the new bills that were coming out October the 8th were going to be the new UST bills, that were going to be the asset-backed bills, and that that would be, you know, the new currency.
Well, let's consider it convertible. Let's consider it a transition currency from one to the other, because it's got two sides, right?
Well, it sure looks good. I take all the gold on it. I mean, it looks like it ought to be gold-backed or hard asset-backed.
And I can't remember. Let's see. Hang on. There's a website out there that explained what it all meant. That I thought was real good. I can't remember it right off the top of my head at this point in time, but it all made sense to me. And then when you think that they were printed in 2009, that's how long they've been trying to get this done for a while.
Yeah.
So well, you start with $100 bill is. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. One last question. So do you feel like they're going to agree to the different values of all the currencies around these 198 states, and they'll all go through Forex or through the CBIs, and that'll all happen like overnight? Is that the way you picture it?
I do. I don't see any reason not to do it that way, I guess is the question that I would ask, is why would you think that it wouldn't go that way? Because if you're going to do it, you might as
like
well rip the Band-Aid off one at a time, you know?
It's
just a set
like
of numbers in the system.
Yeah, massive, massive undertaking. Gosh, how can we revalue all these different currencies, and they agree or disagree? And I just don't know how they do that, especially if it's going to be all hard asset backed.
Well, the IMF knows what those conversion rates are, and everybody, you know, I don't know if the countries have to submit a tally sheet of what they've got or whatever. I don't know. Maybe that's out there somewhere, but.
And
you know, we are aware they're running the system, and we know they run the system set up to turn over in the Forex.
Yeah.
So load a set of codes is not that big a deal. You know.
Because what I think is it probably will go all at the same time, and they've already figured out what their assets are. And of the 190 countries out there, most of them are going to see very, very little change because the market has already determined the value of those currencies on the open exchange market in its trading. So it's the four countries whose currencies are way out of balance with the rest of the world, and that's Iraq, Vietnam, Indonesia, and Zimbabwe. Those are the ones that have the potential to pop, and the others will see very little change. Very, very little change because the market sets that. The market sets what that rate is based upon their ability to, what kind of hard assets they have in the country and their ability to produce goods. And there's formulas they use for that. To me, those are already in place.
Well, it's also what somebody will pay for it. I've got some 50T Zimbabwes, and they come out at a penny. That's $500 billion. And we talked about it's only going to be worth what somebody will pay for it. So I guess Forex the world, you know, the traffic and whatever and the values will determine what they're really worth.
Sure. Now Zimbabwe is a different question. That's a totally different issue because they're so far out of balance with the rest of the world that, you know, I mean, how you even people email me and say, should I buy Zimbabwe, you know, dollars? And I say, well, it's highly, highly speculative. It's almost more speculative than the lottery, and I would say it's always your choice, but I would say consider it like buying a lottery ticket. The odds are you're not going to win, but if you do, you'll probably hit it big. But the odds are
buying for a dollar a piece on eBay, that's where I got mine.
Yeah, and I just say, you know, if you want to buy it, fine, but I'd say buy it with money you can afford to lose.
Sure.
Now, the Iraqi dinar is entirely different because we get data
coming
out every single day that's backing up how solid it is, what their assets are, what they have in their country. See, so we get We get information on them every day. The Vietnamese dong, for a long time, we weren't getting anything. And then it was a couple of weeks ago that article came out, gave the history of the dong. And I thought, wow, finally, for the first time, we got something that was really good.
Yeah.
And there's another interesting thing that a lot of people don't know about the Indonesian rupa. His name escapes me, but he's the former emperor, and his name begins with an S. He, for decades, was the trustee of a lot of that gold in Asia. It was under his control as the trustee. And I always wondered in the back, I haven't done my research on this, so I just, folks, you need to know, I'm kind of speculating on this when I say it, but I always wondered, why was Indonesia's rupa so far out of balance with the rest of the world? There was no logical sense for it to be that way. They hadn't been through a war. They've got a decent economy. They've got some things that are very stable. They shouldn't be so far out of balance like that. And it could be back to the fact that it was a cabal fight against him because he was the trustee of all that gold. That's speculation on my part. I haven't done my research on it, but it sure caught my attention when I saw that. And David Wilcoff talks about him in that book that he has, Financial Tyranny. He talks about his role in being the trustee of a lot of the gold in Asia.
Well, I got the website on that on the $100 bill you were talking about a while ago, Hidden Meanings of the New $100 Bill. It's www.roadtoruta.com/. Well, I'm sure y'all can't remember all this, but there is a website that you can read about the hidden meanings in the new $100 bill.
Sure. Yep. Yeah, I think it's what, like Jester said, it's a transitionary currency. It's allowing us to become accustomed that something else is going to be there.
Yeah.
And you said they started.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Well, good. Well, Tex, anything else?
No. Thank you very much, Dave. Jester, good talking to you, and we read you all the time.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right, we'll go to one more caller. He's calling from Missouri. His name is Stan, and Jester, he wants to talk to you about the Republic and the GCR. So, okay, you're on the air here with Jester and Dave.
Good evening to you both. I thank you for taking my call. Jester, I'm a lurker on your chat forum. I am as excited about the Republic as I am about the currency reevaluation. And with all the stuff that's going on in our government, I would like for you to tie that in with the GCR, if you would, please, and let us know where we are with the coming back of the Republic instead of the corporation, please.
Well, that's a pretty long answer, but you know, one of the things that I think is important to realize is if you're going to go to this much trouble to do what you need to do, you've got to get the people that have been running it the way they've been running it for the past years out of the way. And
Amen.
One of the things that they're going to have to do is, you know, these central banks have got to go. You look at the amount of things that was done that the American people don't even know was done to them that's unconstitutional, and you know, the Fed being one of them, and I guess it was you know, done under the guise of stabilizing the money and whatnot. But the people don't realize that the U.S. is a corporation. They don't realize that the Fed is a central bank. You know, this has been a huge secret for a long time. I mean, it's not really a secret, but, you know, anybody that talks about it's labeled a conspiracy theorist. So,
well, you were the one that brought it to my attention, I'll tell you that, okay? And I appreciate it very much, and I've followed you ever since you fell off of us, and like I said, I'm a lurker on your chat forum, and I appreciate you very much.
Well, then you've probably done a lot of the background research, so you know that what we're saying is true. You know about the creature from Jekyll Island that formed the Fed. You know about all the other things that were done down the years that took away the republic and brought in unconstitutional things, and that these things could be swept away. You know, when this plan came about for the control of the United States, in my opinion, and one of the reasons that I believe it happened was they realized that to get control, you got to a certain extent, mislead the people or distract the people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they're not teaching the reality of the Fed, I mean, these are things that, quite frankly, everybody should know. I mean, this is our government, right? Our government's supposed to take care of us, but it has been done to us. And it's been done by this cabal for control of us. So, you know, people need to change their mind frame here and realize that they've been hoodwinked. And it's going to take a lot of time. Well, yeah, I think it's going to take a generation to get it out there. I mean, you know, get people reprogrammed to the way things are supposed to be to a certain extent, because they think this is the way of life. You know, the new kids think they don't have to work. You know, I know a lot of kids that live at their grandma's, but they're on food stamps because they don't want to work. I mean, I could go on and on, but that's not really the question you asked. And so, you know, there are people out there that, and I alluded to it a little while ago. We were talking about the different factions that are involved here. You know, the White Hats and the White Knights here in the U.S., you know, they want that fixed. And that's part of the equation. Because how are you going to fix the monetary situation if you leave what's going on in the government the way it is?
Right.
And are the dragons going to trust that? I doubt it. I wouldn't. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My question is, are we going to see the Republic come back in when the GCR takes place at the same time, or is it going to be down the road?
You know, that's a good question. And I'll be honest with you that at one point in time I was firmly of the opinion that it would all happen at once. I don't know that it has to, but I think there has to be an evidence of it, okay? And so, you know, because if you reset and leave everything the way it is now, it won't take long for them to run it right back down the way it is.
Exactly.
In my opinion.
Exactly. Yes.
And so I believe that there's going to have to at least be an evidence of it. You know what I mean?
It's not that simple. Because, now, see, to me, now, you know, and Jester, we haven't talked about this, and I think it would be a good conversation that, you know, for you and I, that we can talk with during the week, is it, people think that, well, the Congress and the President, if you just replace them all and everything gets fixed. No, it doesn't. That doesn't solve the problem because it's a system. It's an institution and a system endemic that there are some laws that have to be changed. Congress has the ability to get rid of the Fed. They are the ones that can do that. But it's not that simple because of the fact that anybody who tries to do anything, their lives become threatened. Now, set aside the politics of this statement, but you look at Congressman Ron Paul, who for 10, 15 years tried to expose the Fed, and he couldn't get anywhere. And he even chaired the committee for 2 years, and he couldn't get anywhere. It's because of the power of the media that the cabal controls. And the members of Congress, they're so busy every day that they don't have time to get in and focus on it. It takes a couple people to stand up, to be in the right positions, and to just become a bully on the rest of their colleagues in Congress and not be afraid of the fact that they'll get killed for doing it. I mean, you think Senator Paul Wellstone, who died in that airplane crash, was an accident? Of course not. Do you think Tim Russert, who was, you know, on Face the Nation, that he died of a heart attack at the 49? No, he didn't die there. He was killed because he started to understand what was going on, and he was getting ready to talk about it. he was getting ready to talk about what really happened behind 9/11. I mean, they'll snuff you out in a heartbeat.
We
know?
Can go and all the way back to John F. K. too.
Absolutely. I mean, I believe Kennedy was assassinated because he wanted to get rid of the Fed, because he signed that executive order, and 10 days later he was dead.
Yep.
You know?
Well, he put $5 billion worth of U.S. T-notes on the street, and they were gone in a month after he was killed.
Exactly.
Right. You see, that power system is so strong and so deeply entrenched, it's not that simple to change it. It takes, I think, one of those historical monumental events that's just going to, and I don't want to necessarily say it takes a crisis, but it takes something to wake the people up of what's really going on so the truth would be exposed. Media can't talk about it. They're dead if they do. They're ostracized if they do. You know, I mean, because it's back to that the cabal controls them. And, you know, your government officials at the high places, they don't, the only one that really has that power is the president through executive order, that Congress and the courts can overrule him in a heartbeat. You know, so he doesn't, mm-hmm. he's not as powerful as people make him out to be. And he gets threats on his life. Now, I can't say this exactly for certain, but I get people telling me, says that if he does certain things, his kids are dead. Now, how hard do you think it would be to assassinate his kid? Do it in a heartbeat. And are you willing to put your children's life on the line? You know, that's the, you know, as a parent, would I do that? I don't think I would. I'd say that's bigger than me. You know, it's not that simple. It's not that easy. Now, will it happen? I think it will happen at some time, but I don't, and see, to me, to have the republic restored is you have to get rid of the Fed and you have to get rid of the IRS because those are the money power controllers that have overridden the Constitution. And when the Congress created the Federal Reserve, they basically abdicated their constitutional responsibility. They gave the power of money, of taxing and spending, to a private corporation when it was their responsibility, and it's black and white in the Constitution. So, and
right.
That's how I see it, you know. And
before
I think we'll see that change come, and I don't know when it's going to happen, but that's we'll see it. It'll phase in. It could come overnight. I have no idea, but it's not a simple, easy thing to do.
I want to say that I am so thankful that you two found one another because I think you're a great team, and I want this to continue on. I don't want this to be the only night that this happens because I think it's a great situation for both of you and for us out here that are listening to what you have to say. And I thank you for your time today very much.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate that. Okay. Yeah. And we got...
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and take you off the air. You know, all the years I was in politics, I would hear these people and they would come to me and say, well, you know, the Fed's corrupt and we got to change this and blah, blah, blah and everything else. See, and in the back of my mind, it was never on my radar screen because I was so busy with so much other stuff, and I was at the state level, and that was a federal issue. So I said, you know, you're just bothering my time. I would politely listen when these people would come into my office, you know, and would explain it to me. But it never connected with me until I went through my own personal crisis that woke me up. And when we had the market crash of 2008, and I was on a real estate development project, and I was, you know, about 8 months away from making some very good money. And when that crashed, I crashed. I lost everything I had. I had to file bankruptcy. I lost my home to foreclosure. That was a crisis that woke me up. Well, something of that nature needs to happen on a national scale. That's how I see it. Now, could it happen differently? Absolutely. Could it totally take place somewhere else? Absolutely. But normally, when you have huge, huge, major shifts in history, it's because something of a crisis or something of a monumental event that takes place that wakes up the people. The people are always, collectively, are always the most powerful. But the problem is, as a collective of citizens, as the people, we're mostly asleep. We're not aware of what's really out there. And it is a matter of us just continuing to basically, you know, talk to others, spread the word. And the Internet is allowing that to do this. It would have been extremely difficult to have a conversation like this on a regular radio program. Very difficult. But with Blog Talk Radio and the Internet, It's changing our lives because we get to talk to each other. Okay, we got 4 minutes left. We got one more caller. So I want to go to that, and then we'll do a wrap-up. So I'm going to a gentleman from Alabama, and he wants to talk with Jester. So you're on the air. What's your name?
Pastor C.
Dave?
Yeah. I was calling just to see where we were with the RV. I just found out about your call, and I'm sorry I came in so late, but I'm just glad to hear you all tonight.
Yeah. Any questions or anything?
Yeah, I want to know where we are with the RV and where are we right now?
Well, that's the $64 question, isn't it?
How about $64
billion? Depends on how you, yeah, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, like I explained earlier, you know, we get information that is all over the board on this. I mean, if you take away the Dinar land stuff, then, you know, I would have told you a couple of weeks ago that we're looking at the end of the first quarter at best and maybe, you know, as far as June. But we have picked up some little blips on the radar here recently that it may be closer than that. Now, I can't give you a date or anything because I don't do date and rate anyway because there's no percentage in that.
Of course.
You know, so, you know, that's about as close as I can try to narrow that down for you. And that's disregarding the same people telling me that it's going to night, you know, just like every other single night.
Right.
And listen to the people that have been telling me the truth from, you know, back in the summer. So
mm-hmm.
I know that's not a very helpful answer to your question, but it's about the best I can do.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, I don't mean to cut you off, but in 2 minutes I'm off the air. So I want to thank you for calling. And Jester, thank you. I really enjoyed this. Well, the gentleman previously said it would be good for you and I to do this, and I'd love to have you back on again. I think this is really good. You bring a really good balance to what is there, and I like where you come from, and we can talk about some more of that during the week, but I'd love to have you back. And it's just another way that we can help educate people to what's really going on. And, you know, if we have this desire to see, you know, the Republic restored, it's an education process. So, 30 seconds. Any final comments?
That sounds great. I'd love to do it. I'd like to, you know, I think everybody might be happy with an understanding of how they got here. That might be a good thing to do. And I always like to tie into you and your background on the Republic. We've already decided to have that conversation ourselves anyway.
Yeah, just so that we know where each of us are coming from. It sounds like we're on the same page. We're pretty close. So, well, folks, thank you so much. It's, you know, I got down to less than a minute. Again, this is the Sedona Connection with Dave Schmidt. My friend Jester, that's what he goes through. He has his own place called Jester's Place. It's a blog forum that you can tie into. You just go into Google Jester's Place. You'll see it there. If you're not on it, you do have to log in. You have to be able to, you know, become a member. But you can go in there anytime and just join the chat forums that are there. Jester's usually on there about late every night for a little bit. And the postings that you've been seeing on Dinar Recaps in the last, 3 and 4 weeks is because they take that from his blog site or his forum site. So, again, March 23rd, we'd love to have you come for our one-day workshop. We're going to put all this together in one day where we can greet each other and have a wonderful time, okay? Thanks, folks. Enjoyed it, and see you next week.